Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Premier Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined as always by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Michael Stewart. Dr. Stu, what's up, buddy?
Hey, James, what's going on? It is another lovely Wednesday to talk about fantasy football. We're getting closer to the season. What was it? Something one of our friends said the other day, it's like 7 weeks until college football. So you can kind of almost smell it on the horizon, which is really exciting. I'm doing good. Just another week for us. We're actually getting ready for a wedding this weekend. My sister-in-law is marrying a guy on Saturday, so everybody's high energy, high stress right now, but it'll be a good time. Weddings are a great time, and the best part about it is that I'm not in any of the parties, so I get to just show up. It's going to be amazing. But before we get into our beers and our talks, James, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing fairly well. I'm actually very tired. It was a long day today, hanging out at the brewery, doing a very long canning run, and that's all fine. We're having a good day, and I'm excited to talk football and drink beer with you, my buddy, Stu. So, with that, what are you drinking tonight, my friend?
Yes, so I have a new one, not an American beer. This is a Canadian beer. So with the wedding happening, my brother-in-law, who lives and is from Canada, he brought me some specific brews. This is from Sleeping Giant Brewing Company in Thunder Bay, Ontario. This is the Skull Rock Oatmeal Stout. 6 different malts, toasted oak silkiness, and English hop delivered in a balanced complexity. It's a sweet stout with rich grain and chocolate flavor. The IBUs are just over 30, and the alcohol by volume is 5.1. So pretty soft overall. Hoping for something nice and drinkable as we talk about football. But first, James, I want to know what you are drinking tonight.
Hold on, that is the coolest combination of words I have ever heard. The
Thunder
brewery,
Bay, yeah.
The title and the location. Can you just say it all one more time, just
yes,
for me?
This is the Skull Rock Oatmeal Stout from Sleeping Giant Brewing Company in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada.
Why are more titles of things not cool like that? That is awesome. Not to be outdone, I am drinking a beer today from a brewery I know and love, but a beer I don't think I've had. This is from the Old Irving Brewery in Old Irving, Chicago, Illinois. This is the Doji West Coast Pilsner. It is a 5.5 ABV West Coast Pilsner, and I'm usually the guy with the beer facts. I don't actually know what makes a Pilsner a West Coast Pilsner, especially considering that this is from Chicago. But it has Citra and Amarillo hops, and it is a lager. So I like this brewery. All their beers are good. And let's crack these bald boys in 3, 2, 1. Did I say bald boys?
I think you said bad boys, but just with the accent of a West Coast
bod
Pilsner.
Boys. Well, I guess if I said bod boys, that's like Boston accent, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's good.
Good.
Finally going to get some variety on my top five chart, because I have 4 out of my 5 from Sturdy Shelter. No offense to Sturdy Shelter, but this is going on the top 5.
I do have another... I've been intentionally avoiding Sturdy Shelter beers this season because I did so many of them last season, and I don't want to appear as much of a homer as I am, but I have been specifically waiting for one of the beers we can today, and I was going to do it tonight, but I wanted to save it for a night when I was in a better mood. So next week, we're going to be doing that one. But anyway... We've got a fun show planned for you all today. We are talking about the other half of the NFC East. Last week, we hit the Cowboys and the Eagles. This week, we've got the Commies and the Giants. Two teams that were finishing a little bit lower down in the division last year. The Commanders probably the most I'm not even going to say they were the most disappointing team in the NFC East, because that was probably the Eagles. They had Super Bowl aspirations. The Commanders at least had playoff aspirations, and just, I would say mostly injuries kept them from that. And then the Giants, in their spurts of excitingness, are kind of getting the hype that the Commanders had last year. So we'll see whether or not they're able to live up to that. So, Stu, let's go ahead and start with Washington. You can take the board, go wherever you want here. Where would you like to start with the Commies?
Let's start with a little bit of a bang, because there's not a whole lot of bang that's on the Washington Commanders. But we've got Jaden Daniels, the guy helming the offense going into his third season, was phenomenal as a rookie, injured a little bit last year, but still reasonably effective in limited showing. He did top over 1,000 yards passing with an 8-3 touchdown to interception ratio. Wasn't great, but again, injuries. And now, James, he's going, from our notes, as the quarterback 5. And I have to say, that is a lot of faith for a third-year player who has shown it in 1.15 seasons of his career. So that's a pretty price to pay to go up to round 4, take a quarterback, and then kind of just hope the Commanders are going to be a lot better. They did not make a huge splash in free agency on their offense, as well as their draft. I just want to quickly highlight their draft. They went a wide receiver in round 3 with Antonio Williams, who projects to top out as maybe a wide receiver 2, which they did desperately need. I mean, they had Luke McCaffrey as their wide receiver 2 going into the offseason. And then they did take a running back in Ka'Tron Allen in the 6th round, who projects as perhaps a backup or a special teams player. So not any huge additions to the offense for Jaden Daniels to play around with. A lot of question marks there. Not a player I'm super high on, Jaden Daniels, at this price. He needs to come down a little bit before I'm willing to take him. How do you feel about him, James?
Pretty much exactly the same. Even last year, despite him having such a phenomenal season he did in his rookie season, anytime you have a sophomore quarterback, you have to kind of think about what the previous season actually told you about what the quarterback did. Jaden Daniels now going into his junior season. You have to think a little bit harder even still, because we've seen the rookie breakout. We've seen the sophomore slump. And I do mostly blame the sophomore slump on injuries, but even when he was healthy, he wasn't playing that incredibly well. I think he only had 1 or 2 weeks throughout the entire season where he was healthy and was also in the QB1 category. So I don't see Jaden Daniels earning a top 4 round selection. QB5 does seem very high to me. I think there are several other quarterbacks at least that are going below him that I would rather have. Kind of proving our point further that this is going to be a good season to wait on quarterbacks. Let someone else take Jaden Daniels, someone who you're not really sure if you can trust. In the 4th round, you can, I think, get much better value than that. And, yeah, I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. But as long as we're talking about it, let's go ahead and go over to the wide receivers, as you mentioned. I think the clear-cut wide receiver 1 for the Washington Commanders is, of course, the guy coming over from the San Francisco 49ers, Brandon Ayuk, everybody.
Full of jokes tonight, aren't you?
I am full of jokes. He's not coming over. He has he played his last down in the NFL?
He has burned every single bridge. He's burned bridges that don't even exist. He wasn't even on this team, and he lost his job with this team.
He is the first guy to ever be cut by a team he had no affiliation with.
It's honestly really sad being honest, because he needs, I think, some help.
Yeah, it's not the first time we've seen something like this happen, but it's frustrating considering who it's coming from. But anyway, that said, Terry McLaurin is, I say the clear-cut wide receiver one, despite the fact that he had a tough season last year. And again, like I said, I think the story of the Commanders last year was injuries. That was definitely the story with Terry McLaurin, holdout notwithstanding. But when he was able to play, he wasn't horribly effective. So there is a lot to prove and a lot of... I mean, he's going as the wide receiver 22 in the fifth round. That's not a lot of hype, but for what he did last year, it kind of is. Someone who is, looking at the numbers here, a top five quarterback in the NFL should not have their number one wide receiver going as a low end wide receiver two. That just doesn't compute. He should be fighting to be in the wide receiver one category like he has in previous seasons of his career. And at his best, that's who he is. He's a PPR darling. He can make people miss. He's effective, making the most out of the middle of the field. That's great for Terry McLaurin. We didn't see that last year. And it's not exactly in the NFL a thing where you can say, well, he was hurt last year, so he's clearly going to be healthy and perform this year. That's not really how football works. It's how it can work, but it's not exactly something that is going to give me a huge vote of confidence to want him where he is going or really at all. He's on my avoid list, as are all of the other Commanders receivers. But Stu, I know you're a little bit more positive about Terry, so talk on that for me.
Yeah, I am a little bit more positive on Terry. I think he's one of the more obvious bounce back candidates for some of the reasons even you brought up. Like you said, the number one option for what we consider to be a top flight quarterback, I know I just argued against Jaden Daniels, but the number one option in an offense that shouldn't be as bad as it was last year, going as the wide receiver 22, I think there's a fairly obvious, you know, discrepancy there for what he can become. I mean, his ceiling is not going to be a wide receiver one, at least not in fantasy. Somewhere in the 14 to 18 range is probably where he'll land, at least from what I consider. But if you're taking him at wide receiver 22, there you go. There's a little bit of value there. If you went running back heavy, I've been taking Terry once or twice in mocks. Don't hate it. Like, he has performed with Jaden Daniels before. He was, you know, he had a lingering quad injury throughout the entirety of the 2025 season. I should know. I owned him, and it was really frustrating. But you can't really hold injuries against players, you know, that much, in my opinion, at least. A big knock against him, though, is that he is now on the wrong side of 30. This is one of the few players in the NFL it feels it is still older than me, which is kind of nice, but only older by a couple months. So I like him to an extent. Not one of the guys I'm itching to go get, but I'm not super upset if he does fall to me, and he is the only Commander that I'm willing to take. So can we just talk about the rest? Let's get Chig Okonkwo out of the way, tight end. So this is their big free agency splash. They signed him for a 3-year deal. He came over from the Titans, where he would flash some athleticism, but overall would be not a fantasy relevant option. He did have, I think, what was it, 2 years ago, he had a real flash towards the end of the season where he put together 4 to 6 games of good production, and then that's just never happened again. I will say Jaden Daniels has made Zach Ertz, you know, aged and infirm Zach Ertz, quite relevant in this offense. So Chig Okonkwo is one of the more popular, you know, like sleeper picks for tight ends. If you want to call any sort of tight end selection in drafts a sleeper pick, you could do worse than, I guess, throwing a bone to Chig Okonkwo and taking him really, 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 really late. James, anything on him, or do you want to talk about the just putridness of this running back stable?
So I would like to get to the running backs, but I do want to talk about Chig Okonkwo, because I actually do agree that Chig Okonkwo is a great pick to be a sleeper. If he was draftable, which I don't really think he is, I think he's going to be at the very top of lists for waiver pickups in week one. or after week one, rather. But looking at Zach Ertz, I think, is the primary reason for that, because I think Chika Kwankwo is, at this point in his career, a marked improvement. And Chika Kwankwo, despite not putting up numbers that would impress you, it's the prospect that we're looking at here. And he didn't have a quarterback throwing to him basically his entire time in the NFL. And Zach Ertz, even last year, like 9.7 points a game is not good, but for tight ends, that's average. And it's above average. It's startable at times in fantasy football. And him only playing 13 games, being injured, that did hurt Zach Ertz in the way we look at his season last year. But the year before, he was 10.4, which if you are scoring double digits as a tight end, you're usually startable more weeks than you're not. So I see Chika Kwankwo doing well above that. And I told you while we were off air, I think that the Commanders are a team that no one thinks anything is coming out of this year. And whoever guesses right on the players that are going to take off are going to potentially win championships because of it. Chika Kwankwo could be one of them. Another one, I think, could be Rashad White. And going over to the running backs, that doesn't mean I'm excited about him. I'm definitely not excited about Jakobi Meritt or Catron Allen or Jerome Ford or Jeremy McNichols or Robert Henry, or if they have any other backs coming into camp that I didn't mention. I'm not excited about any of you, but I do know that we've seen flashes out of Rashad White in the past that have shown us that if he can't be a star in the NFL, if he can't be a star in fantasy football, he can definitely be a role player that can be important down the line. And Bill Kroski Merritt is still young, can still develop into something. We've seen guys do it before. We've seen it with Javonte Williams. We've seen it with Rico Dowdle. We've seen guys be able to come into different situations, and I know he's on the same team, but hopefully that team is healthier this year, and elevate their game. I think that there is going to be some fantasy relevance here. I'm not targeting these guys in drafts. Rashad White's going in the 7th. Bill is going in the 8th. And I'm even seeing Catron Allen going as a late round dart throw in like 14, 15, 16. But I think that someone in this lineup we have here is going to exceed expectations in such a way that it is going to make people regret not taking them. And I can feel you wincing over there, Stu. Mm-hmm. Like I feel it. So
in my head, I did say ooh when you said that.
It just makes sense. Like, this is a team that is not primed to not bounce back, but accelerate a bit. Last year was, I wouldn't say it was aggression towards the mean. I would say it was just regression, but it wasn't one that was fueled by incompetence, I don't think. So I just see something is wrong here in how we're evaluating this. And please tell me I'm wrong.
I mean, I think that the way we're thinking about the Commanders as a general society versus what they can be or should be, it differs a little bit. I agree with you there, but I don't think that extra value is coming out of the running game. I think it's coming out of the passing game and Jaden Daniels, if it's going to happen at all. I think if any team is relying upon either Bill Kroski or Rashad White, you're in dire straits. This feels like a split between multiple mediocre options. If any of them, I would rather have Rashad White, but this guy played his way out of Tampa. He was supplanted by Bucky Irving with basically no fanfare. I mean, without a bang, but with a whimper. It's just, I don't see his plodding running style, you know, functioning as a fantasy asset. I mean, and JCM is statistically pretty similar to Rashad White. There's no clear-cut, you know, front runner to start the season. outside of injury that we can't predict going into drafts, I mean, how could you really pick between these two guys? You're just throwing a dart at them, and you're throwing a dart at two players that do not bring joy. What does that one meme about? I don't. It doesn't matter.
Is that the Marie Kondo? Something. What it is?
This one sparks joy. This one does not spark joy. Like, let me look at. I don't know. Let's say the Giants running back room. This one sparks joy. Commanders. This one does not. Like, if you're relying on them for anything other than flex value during bye weeks, I think you're in trouble. Your real starters have gone down to injury, and there's you're just trying to tread water, at least. But is that it? That's the Commanders? That felt really fast. But
yeah,
again,
and there's also
like
the fact that there's basically no defense in Washington, so the offense is going to be on the field a lot, which means more opportunities to score. But let's go to New York, where this has maybe been the hype team of the offseason, but also the... I don't exactly know how to describe what the New York Giants have been. We've seen a lot of Jackson Dart. We've seen a lot of Cam Scataboo. A lot of weirdness out of those two supposed stars in waiting. I was very excited about this team. I think that Jackson Dart, Cam Scataboo, Malik Nabers can be like a Peyton Manning, Edgerrin James, Marvin Harrison triplet situation. Plus a little bit of Isaiah Likely on the side. But weird things we're hearing based on lots of stuff. So let's go ahead and just start with Jackson Dart. Let's start with Anakin. I said it last year. I was very high on him as a underdrafted rookie. I ended up being right on that. But what we end up seeing from him isn't necessarily elite. It's more just flashes of what could be. So we see a gamer, a gunslinger, guy with a little bit of moxie, probably primed to be knocked down a peg by some more solid defenses. Not that there are many solid defenses in his division, but we're currently seeing Jackson Dart going as a QB11, which would make him a startable quarterback in fantasy football in 12-team leagues. I have been targeting him a fair amount. Like I said, this is a great season to wait on quarterbacks. And I think if you have Malik Nabers as your primary receiving option, there's a really good chance that that is going to work out pretty decently well for you. That being said, the way he plays is something of a concern. Can he stay healthy with his desire to use his feet constantly and not protect himself? Historically, does that work? No, it does not work. So what is the best ability class? It is availability. And we have not seen any availability from his two biggest compadres here, Cam Scataboo and Malik Nabers. So that is the big thing that concerns me going forward here. I feel like I just kind of word saladed there and said like some coach speak. So Stu, be direct, please.
Coach speak works really well for their new head coach. We didn't mention they signed Harbaugh, so
Harbaugh. Yeah, that's important.
I don't like Harbaugh in this signing. I'm a little worried about it, but anyway, I'm gonna be direct. The New York Football Giants are a house of playing cards set on a major fault line. There's the potential for very high highs. Jackson Dart, Malik Nabers, Cam Scataboo are just prototypes of what you want in a fantasy productive player, but they each come with massive question marks. Jackson Dart, let's start with him. The biggest question mark is that he's incredibly young. He has one season under his belt, and he played well. He didn't have Malik Nabers the whole time. He didn't have Cam Scataboo the whole time. but he still played well. He is mobile. He's able to run. His arm is okay. His accuracy is all right, but again, he's missing a lot of his big players. So yes, everything that you want in a fantasy quarterback is right there in the later or mid to later rounds if you want to wait on quarterback. But, and this is my biggest thing with him, as you mentioned, it's the play style. He needs to protect himself, in my opinion, before I just hand my fantasy team to him, like the reins to my franchise or what have you, if you're a dynasty player. I don't want the level of risk, personally. I think you can get, you know, Herbert or Brock Purdy around the same level and trust that they're going to be a little bit healthier. Maybe not Herbert, because he tends to get hurt sometimes, but I just don't like Jackson Dart sprinting and galloping down the sidelines and not stepping out of bounds and taking crushing hits. I mean, you've seen the hit that I'm referencing. He gets just flat out floored. I don't want to see that at all in 2026. And then if he can do that, 2027 is where I'm going for Jackson Dart once he's, you know, too expensive.
So Stu, if I could interject.
Yes.
To kind of use your own logic against you.
You can't use my own logic. It varies from player to player, James. You know this. You can't call me out on it.
No, that's why I'm calling you out on that. Jackson Dart, would it be worth taking him in the 11th round, a very late dart throw, aiming for his ceiling, knowing that you can get your favorite target in the draft, Baker Mayfield,
we never
on
said
waivers,
my favorite
on waivers? What does that make you more comfortable thinking about him?
I mean, if you take Jackson Dart and you also get like a Matt Stafford or Baker Mayfield or what have you, I can't think of anybody else right now because I'm 3/4 of the way through this beer, then fine, sure, that's cool. But just be smart about it, you know? Don't cripple yourself for this young gunslinger, hotshot, I'm not going to get into politics for the sake of the joke, person. Just stay within yourself. We're here to win fantasy football championships, and I don't know if we're there yet with him. I want him to be there. I do. I truly do. I don't want to shoot for those highs and get those lows.
Sure.
And then we get to move on to Malik Nabers. Let's go with Malik Nabers. He got exactly one pass from Jackson Dart, and it was great. Deep bomb, caught it, great. Tore his ACL. We're 1-for-1 on attempts from Jackson Dart that tear Malik Nabers' knee ligaments. And the thing about Malik Nabers is that he is incredibly talented. We already know this. I'm a big fan, have him in Dynasty, but they've been very cagey. They being the New York Football Giants, they've been very cagey about his availability for week one. If you're going to be taking a player in the first two rounds, we currently have him as the wide receiver 16, you need to be sure that this drafted player is going to be available and able to put up the numbers that you need from your first two draft picks. You cannot lose, or you cannot win your draft in the first round, but you can lose it. If Malik Nabers is not up to snuff because of this injury, I mean, knee injuries, really, really bad. Some people don't come back the same. If he's not available even at the start of the season and then he's bad later, this might not be the Malik Nabers year. And if you took him in the first or the second round, as he's currently going, then you are going to be left out to dry before you really can even get underway with your fantasy season, James. I didn't put any stats into that. I hope you have stats about Malik Nabers, but go ahead.
If you would like stats on Malik Nabers, I do not have them pulled up.
That's because he didn't play last year because he was hurt.
But I do now have stats on Malik Nabers pulled up while I was talking about not having them pulled up. Really, all we have to go on last year for Malik Nabers is his points per game, which is 14.2, which would put him as the 14th highest scoring wide receiver in points per game. Obviously, that was only 57 points compared to Puka Nacua's top scoring 375, but in a very small sample size, that's pretty impressive. Now, as I said before, the best ability is availability. Malik Nabers has not shown a lot of it. However, in my very deep and very technical statistical research that I've been doing over the course of this summer, the big thing that indicates breakout stars in fantasy football isn't necessarily that. It is places where there has been high production that has had something that has prevented it from being consistent. And that seems like it is calling out Malik Nabers to a T. He has the potential to be a star in the NFL. He only played four games last year. And in those, his most important one was week two against Dallas, where he had 37.7 fantasy points. That's 9 receptions, 13 targets, 167 yards, and 2 touchdowns. That's fantastic. That's great. We love that. But what was preventing him from doing more than that, other than the injury in those other three games? I believe Russell Wilson is probably it. And before that, it was probably Daniel Jones. So, what do we know? What have we learned from this? Basically, it's that Malik Nabers is being underdrafted. Now, you can say the leg injury is concerning, because it is, but a full year for an ACL from week four, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to expect someone to come back for and be ready to go for the start of the season. And if they want to be cagey about it, if they want to be conservative about it, that's fine. We've seen stuff like that before, and we've seen it be fine. We've also seen like that before and seen it be not fine. So I would say keep an eye on him in camp. Keep an eye on him, especially as we get close to your drafts. But I will say, in the fantasy community, often get kind of railroaded by week one availability. Like, we're doing it with Patrick Mahomes right now. We did it with Matt Stafford last year. Guys who may not be ready to go week one of the season, but then have ridiculous MVP level seasons the rest of the year. That kind of seems like what's happening with Malik Nabers right now. And again, the sample size is a problem, but everything else points to magnificence with Malik Nabers. Absolutely nothing else you want to look at in the receiving room. We'll put a special little star next to Malachi Fields, and we'll give an attaboy to Odell Beckham Jr. on getting another contract, at least to come to camp. But past that, running backs. I think probably, outside of Malik Nabers, the most exciting name in this offense is Cam Scadaboo. Does he have a good nickname that I don't know of? Like Scadabooyah is one.
Scadabooyah, oh my gosh. I don't think he has a nickname, but that's a really good one.
Who's the X-Men that wears the helmet and runs through walls? The Juggernaut? Feels like him. He's like a short version of the Juggernaut. I don't think he was an X-Men, He was in the X-Men comics, though.
He was an X-Men bad guy. He was the antagonist.
He was an X-Men. A Y-Men?
Mm-hmm. That's not right. What was that? X-Men 3, The Last Stand?
Oh, yeah. I saw that in theaters. It was cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was a kid then. So anyway, that's what Scadaboo does, except he's not wearing the helmet.
Right. He will just run into walls just to feel something, and what he feels is early onset CTE. But Cam Scadaboo, kind of like Malik Nabers, extremely high ceiling, but potential to crash out due to injuries and availability. Stu, talk to us about the Boo.
Yes.
That's what I'm calling him now. I'm calling him the Boo.
The Boo. The Boo. Of everyone on the New York Football Giants, this is the guy that I want. I'm perfectly happy to pay the price currently. While he does have the injury question. I mean, he comes off of a huge ankle injury. You can look up the video. It's gross. But if there's anyone I trust to not care at all about his physical safety or his future body, it's Cam Scadaboo. And candidly, that's good for fantasy. I don't even know what to say. He's going to get, I think, the lion's share of the load. I mean, Tyrone Tracy is his direct backup, but Tyrone Tracy is the insurance policy. He's capable enough to, you know, help out should Cam go down, but this is Scataboo's backfield. This is, what is this, his second year, right?
Yep.
And this is the year that everything goes his way. He takes off and he becomes elite. So I want a piece of him before he's elite. If that makes any sort of sense. I know that probably contradicts something I said about another player, but you know what? This show's based off of vibes, James. If it wasn't based off of vibes, we wouldn't be drinking while we do it.
All vibes, all the time. And sometimes we say numbers.
Yes, sometimes we say numbers. It's not numbers mostly, it's just vibes.
It's, you know, how the got numbers a bad make vibe? You feel.
You know who I don't feel good about?
Who's that?
Why do we as this fantasy football society get excited about Isaiah Likely? Yes, he comes over from Baltimore, but he played his way out of Baltimore. I don't know if you were following the saga, but he was not trying. He was making mistakes in the field, and he was basically ousted. Now he goes to New York, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, he's going to be amazing. He's going to be super fantasy relevant. He's another one of those Chig Okonkwo types sleepers later on in drafts. And I'm like, no. I mean, number one, I don't think he's that good. And number two, I mean, Theo Johnson is still there. Theo Johnson was the guy that Jackson Dart would lean on when he was sans Cam Scataboo and Malik Nabers. So why would I think that Isaiah Likely coming over here is going to change anything significant and make either of those two, Likely or Johnson, fantasy relevant? It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, James. Can you explain it to me, or are you also confused?
I am also confused. But I also, just really quick on Cam Scataboo, want to say PPR, RB19, going in the fifth round, that is a steal. Steal him. Steal that. Do thievery. Commit crimes. Do it.
Commit crimes? Jesus. We're an anti-crime podcast, by the way.
That specific crime, stealing Cam Scataboo in the fifth round, we support that crime. Isaiah Likely as the tight end 13 seems okay. If we're talking about tight ends, anyone after the tight end 5 or 6, you can probably just kind of throw the next 10 to 12 names in a hat, and you're probably going to have as good of a chance of predicting where they land as if you actually put thought into it. The thing I always talk about is who has the shortest road to success, or the easiest road to production, rather. Isaiah Likely has that. He has a relatively easy road to success. Yes, he has a high-volume wide receiver he's working with. Yes, he has a running back who has the potential to take over games. But Jackson Dart is not... He's not Peyton Manning. He's not going to be a guy who's going to be surgical with his approach to football. He's going to look for targets who are big and targets who are reliable. And is Isaiah Likely that? Maybe. We saw that like 2 or 3 times a year while he was in Baltimore. But what we kind of saw in Baltimore, at least last year, if not even a little bit the year before, was just kind of weird football being played. It was difficult to explain what we were seeing, and it was difficult to predict who was going to get what in what weeks based on it. So here, I think we're going to see a little bit more of a traditional NFL-style offense, and with that, I think we can see a little bit more consistent red zone targets specifically for tight ends, which is the biggest indicator of success for tight ends. So Isaiah Likely is a tight end 13. I see it as a late round dart throw, but I do agree with you that it's not likely that he is a league winner or anything like that. So
full of jokes tonight, James. Full of jokes.
I am on spitting fire. That iced coffee I had an hour or so ago is fueling me to victory. Anything else on that, my darling Stu?
On Isaiah Likely or Theo Johnson? No. I mean, on the New York Giants, period, or the NFC East? Also, no.
On life?
On life?
Maybe?
Yes, we actually have some things to talk about. If you want to, I'm pulling up our nice little email from our listener, Ethan, who sent us an email last week, not just a three-part question, as well as a recommendation for a beer. I will get to that beer recommendation next week. I already had this Canada one planned. Also, Thunder Bay looks like it would be really cool to visit. It's right there on Lake Superior, just outside of Minnesota. There's a national park like right outside of it. Seems fun. Anyway, the second question, James, I think it'll go a little bit quicker than our conversation last week about number one. But number two, question two, do you mock primarily based on your league or just in general or both?
Okay, so mostly based on my league, but also a little bit just in general. And there's reasons for doing it either way. So first and foremost, the reason you mock is to get realistic reps at what you're going to see during a draft. And if you're listening to this podcast, it's likely that you're in more than one league, and not every draft is going to draft equally. And every position in every draft is going to look differently. So if you are in a league where your draft order is based on where you finished the year before, you know what position you're going to be in, and that gives you a huge advantage in order of being able to plan. So you can say, okay, I've got the fourth pick. I can plug that into every draft simulator all over the world, and I can get an idea of what I'm going to get based on the format of my league, the size of my league, and the size of my teams, and the roster setup. And that's going to be the most effective way to help you learn the board. And the downside of that is you then have to do it for every league you know you're drafting in. So if you have a 12-team PPR league, if you've got an 8-team Superflex league, if you've got whatever else, you've got to get all those reps. I would assume that there are ones you care about more than others, and you're probably going to put more reps into that for that. But also, you're probably going to be in some where you don't know where you're going to land. You don't know what pick you're going to be. So for that, you also need to do the random positions. And that also just helps you understand the board a little bit better. So really, there's no way you can do it that's going to hurt you. But I tend to do it with specific leagues in mind. And different fantasy websites can help you set those up to help you mock for your specific leagues and help you put in settings and everything for that. Stu, what do you think about this question?
Yeah, so there's not much I have to add on to anything. Of course, it's going to be a case-by-case basis. You know, how many leagues are you in? Are they going to be random order? Like you said, you're going to want to do random mocks just to kind of prepare yourself as best you can. But for the leagues that are, at least in my opinion, generally a little more serious, you'll have a draft order based off of last year's standings, and you'll know where you are. You're going to want to draft for that. That's what I do, at least. So that's the way my brain thinks. But there is a merit to drafting in the spots of others, just so you can kind of see at least the people directly around you. What do you think you can predict what they're going to do at a certain time in the draft? Like, can you predict, you know, in round three, I'm going to let Scataboo fall because these next people are going to have a good selection of quarterbacks to take, and you think that they're going to go Jaden Daniels plus, you know, Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow. There's different things that you can do. I personally, because, you know, it's all anecdotal anyway, I personally really only draft from my slot and try varying strategies between, you know, the different mocks. So I don't have that many leagues. I know a lot of, you know, people that put out fantasy football content are in, you know, dozens and hundreds or possibly thousands of leagues at the same time. I've got like four, so it's a little bit easier to just focus in on what I personally want to be doing and how I want to prepare for myself. I also work 8 to 5, so I don't have time to do billions of mocks at a time. Yeah, nothing too crazy. based on my league, especially thinking about how, you know, the people around me, you know, I know them. They're my friends. I know how they think to some extent. I can try to predict things and formulate my draft strategy based on that. But both is a good answer, James. But yes.
Also,
yeah. Go ahead, please. Yeah.
Also, not to plug myself too much, but on the fantasyfootbeer.com blog, I did this past week, inspired by Ethan's three-part question, put out a nice little blog post about mock drafting and why you should do it. So if you'd like to learn more about mock drafting and why you should do it and see some movie references along the way, read that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's an AI picture at the bottom too. That's at fantasyfootbeer.com. You'll also find us on our various socials on X and Instagram at fantasyfootbeer on both platforms. Just like Ethan did, you can email us beer recommendations and/or questions, fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. Just to wrap up for tonight, thank you all for listening. We get to move on to another division next week. And yeah, that's it. Yeah. NFC East is done. James, take us home for the evening.
All right. Thank you, Stu, for another fantastic episode. You are an excellent person who talks into a microphone about fantasy football. Aw, boo. Anyway, we thank you all for your listenership. You guys are great. Keep listening. Keep reading the blogs. Keep looking at the Instagrams and doing all of that stuff. And get yourself excited for football and fantasy football. Now that the U.S. is out of the World Cup, no one cares about soccer anymore, so we can all focus on the things that matter in life, and that is football. So, for all of us here at Fantasy Footbeer, for Dr. Michael Stewart, for Pixel the Cat and Indie the Dog, I'm James Kemp. Good night, good talk.